Get Puck.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Get Puck podcast. Dave, Vito, Matt here with you. And just getting it out of the way right off the bat, if you can, please subscribe to the channel to be updated when we do drop new episodes. You'll get the little bell if you're on YouTube. You can check us on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. We got the link tree on Twitter under our bio, so you can take a look there if you're interested in more of an audio sort of thing. But and drop a like if you like what you hear. That out of the way. Gentlemen, let's talk hockey. I do have an interesting thing. I've been keeping this one in the back burner for a little bit of time. And I wanted to talk to you guys about it today. So Brian Wild dropped this thing a little while ago. I can't remember exactly when at this point, but he was mentioning something to the effect of the drafting track record of Nick Bobrov, right? And the fact that for the most part, he's heavily slanted and has certain proclivities to European players. Now, he was the head of European scouting, I think, for Boston and even New York. His title here with the Canadiens, I think, is changed. I think we were just talking about this earlier. He's co-director of amateur scouting. Is that it? Okay, mm-hmm. So he's gotten a little bit of a promotion, perhaps. That being said, he still has a track record. I want to run it through you guys, and I want to hear your take on it. Whether this is something that should be concerning for Hab fans that are a little bit highly invested like we are in the team that want to know about scouting and drafting and stuff, because he has some interesting selections. And I wonder if that's, you know, in your opinions, a point of concern. So we have a little chart here. I'm pulling it up if you're able to watch and you can see. Otherwise, we're going to just tell you. We're showing right now his track record for his draft in when he was with Boston between 2001 and 2006. So I think everyone will be in agreement for the hits. Krejci in the second round was massive. That's a massive, massive hit. And Sobotka, also really decent player, fourth round. The rest of them, don't know if you've really heard of any of these guys. So flip it over to New York too, because that's probably where most of the meat is, and then I'll get your guys' take on this. So here, right off the bat, some people might notice what we're displaying is, again, his direct sort of scouted players. You'll notice that 2020 Lafreniere was not there because he's a North American player. So Bobrov probably had very little to do with it. And he was, the pure consensus number one of the year. So when we look at this, you got Chittle and Kaapo Kakko. These guys also very hard to miss on. They were pretty much slotted where they were, and that's who he took. Then you start moving down to the misses. So notably here is Elias Anderson, who's no longer even with New York. Is that a miss? Probably not a first round, seventh overall pick. So that's, that's probably a miss for sure. You got Kravtsov, who also is gone. Nas Lundqvist is also gone. Not probably great picks either. Again, with a first round ninth and a first round 28th. The rest of the guys too, also, I guess you can say to be determined, but probably misses. So putting this aside, I've talked enough. Start with you, Dave. What do you think? Should we be concerned? Is this a thing?
I think you have to give him the benefit of the doubt. At least, I mean, you just started. You got to see what he does first. I mean, you can't just judge
him. He's got a track record.
Okay, fair. He picked, you saw the hits and misses there with Boston. That's not a big sample size. It's also back in the early 2000s. And, arguably David Krejci, one of the most, it's a very, very good pick. And then if you go look at the Rangers picks, I mean, like two-thirds of that kid line there, I mean, that's not too shabby of a draft either. I think it's fine. I think if you go over everybody's track record, it's going to look a little bit similar to that. You're going to see some really good hits, and you're going to see some misses. And the hits, for most of them that are impressive, are going to be guys who were like slam dunks anyways when they drafted them, right? There's very few. I guess his one knock on him is, did he, really get a steal out of there that like wasn't expected? Most of his hits are, pretty early round picks. I think you have to give him the benefit of the doubt. I'm not concerned at all yet. It's a different organization. It's a different, who knows? Again, he wasn't the general manager, right? With the Rangers or with Boston. So who knows what was vetoed, what his plans were. We've heard a lot of stuff, even when Trevor Timmons was here, about guys he wanted that he didn't necessarily get to pick because he didn't have unanimous, off the board approval, So I think I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt. I don't think any of those things are concerning to me. I think that he was a Jeff Gordon guy, obviously, and I think that that's fine with me, and we'll see where how it pays off in the future. The Canadians don't have a very good track record at the draft, so to me, it can either improve or it cannot. You figure it out pretty fast, and then you move on if it doesn't work, but I'm okay with giving him a shot here.
You got to give him as much time, or not as much time, but I mean, we gave Trevor Timmons a very long time to try to turn this around and get certain prospects and whatnot. And he's got a lot of hits in a sense of like NHL ready players or players that played in the NHL, but he's got a lot of misses. So if you're willing to give that much time to Timmons, you're gonna have to give it to Bobrov. Now, the difference between then and now is it would seem that Bobrov doesn't make the decision by himself. I feel like back then when it was a European scouting, when he was drafting for the Rangers or for Boston, it was like, okay, other than the standouts, the Heedles and the Cackles of the world, which they were projected to be in those slots and seemed like it was the easy decision to make. This time around, I don't think Kent Hughes, Marty Lapointe, Vincent LeCavalier are going to be scared to look at Bobrov and say, no, I think we should go with this. And they're going to, come up to a decision on what they're going to do for the draft. It's not necessarily just one guy. They depended on him. He was the head of the European scouting. Whatever he said pretty much goes because he had more visibility on all those players than anybody else, right? Times have changed. There's a lot of media out there. There's a lot of things to that you can watch certain players and scout certain players from afar. So I don't think it's going to just be whatever Bobrov says. So to Dave's point, you'd have to give him the benefit of the doubt with Montreal. There's just different administration. I don't know. I get a different vibe with this administration than I have in the past. And when you look at the picks that he made, it's still to be determined with Hedl and Kakko, but you kind of see they're starting to come out. And yeah, there's those other players like Nils Lundqvist and them that were traded away and Kravtsov were traded away, but they weren't traded away just because they weren't good. They were traded away because they didn't fit on the team. And it's like they identified in the New York Rangers the core of who they want, and now they use those players as trade chips to acquire other players to round out their team a little more. So are they really misses, those players? I know they're like on the list, they were TBD, and shout out to cheering the logo for that list. But at the same time, it's under TBD. I wouldn't call them a miss just yet. It really is still to be determined. And they did get good trade chips to round out their team in the New York Rangers. And then what can you say about Krejci, really? Krejci's been great. He's won Stanley Cups with the Boston Bruins, a Stanley Cup with the Boston Bruins. They're having one of the best years in NHL history with Krejci there. He's not the main piece and Sobotka had a decent career in the NHL. He did some stuff. I mean, fantastic, but he's a fourth round pick and he played 500 games.
Either yeah. I think the main takeaway to circle back, and again, I wish I had his tweet up, but I'm remembering it a bit better now. It's not so much the hits and misses per se. I think it's for whatever reason he being Brian Wild when he wrote the tweet, said something to the effect of, it seems like he's very persuasive in the room and that people listen to him, and he has a long history with Jeff Gordon, who is here now, so he has I don't know, means of convincing him to see things his way. And I think it was more along the lines of, because he's so heavily focused on European prospects, is that the concern? Are the Habs potentially tunnel visioning towards Europe more so than players in North America? And then, that got raised, I think, because of the Slafkovský pick,
to that
which
point,
also reinforced that.
To that point, right? Okay, maybe you could say it, but Slafkovský was pretty much in the conversations for number one. It could have gone either way, Logan Cooley, Shane Wright, but Slafkovský's name was in the mix, okay? And then you saw what he did on the international stage at the World Juniors, and then all of a sudden it's like, okay, Slafkovský, for the most part, is the number one guy. There were still some people saying Shane Wright, but then Shane Wright will start to fall out of favor. But then go look at the rest of the draft. Lane Hudson, North American. Owen Beck, North American. And you know what I mean? So it's going to be one of those situations.
They were later on, right?
They were later on. And Philip Messar was also drafted in that first round, but it was, you watch Slovakia at the same time. But at the same time, it was balanced out. It's not as though whatever Bobrov says goes. You could tell by that last draft that it was a mix. It seems like they all spoke with each other, and Kent Hughes has a history with some of the players that were drafted. So it wasn't just whatever Bobrov says. It seems like they collaborated, they worked together to identify the right players they wanted to draft. And that's who they drafted. And you know what? So far, so good, because everything we're hearing about now is that they're all very good. Slafkovský, okay, he's got probably the most pressure out of all of them because he was the first overall pick. But at the end of the day, look what we're hearing about Lane Hudson. Look what we're hearing about Owen Beck. Look what we're hearing about Messer. Everything is going well so far. Let's see how it goes once they get to the NHL.
That's fair. Okay. I mean, I just brought it up because I was curious. I thought it was an interesting thing to think about, but I didn't know you had such strong feelings, Vito. I mean, I would have totally changed the way I approached this question. But
I'm a passionate guy.
Yeah. Let me talk about another little rumor thing that came out, and I thought this was interesting too. And I think you also have strong opinions about this one, so we'll see. Philadelphia is like circling the drain, right? Total dumpster fire going on over there. They fired the GM, replaced with Danny Briere in the interim. So a lot of stuff going on. Danny Briere came out and said it's not going to be a quick turnaround. It won't be a retool. This is a proper rebuild. It's going to take a few years. So needless to say, the rumors flying right off the bat with their goaltender, Carter. So what to be done with Carter Hart? And so some people are suggesting the Habs should take a run at this kid. Dave,
yeah.
Is Carter Hart the solution to the goaltending problem issue that exists in Montreal, or should they steer very far away?
I mean, I don't know if he's the solution. He could be. I think Carter Hart's been plagued by injuries. He was in COVID protocol back in the day. I remember, like, he had a lot of pressure coming into that Philly situation where they haven't had a goalie in 300 years, and you know they expected him to kind of come in and steal games. And I mean, the Flyers have been terrible though. So how much is really on him and how much is it on, you know, his defense corps, which is terrible. I mean, I think 1 year, I was just quickly perusing the stats earlier, and it's like they led the league in like opportunities given to the other team and high risk, high danger chances given. I mean, like, how much can you blame that on your goalie? Sure, he's not maybe stealing you the games, but it's interesting with Carter Hart because he's it's like a chicken and the egg, you know, is it him or is it the Flyers? And would a change of scenery help? It depends on, again, it depends, I guess, on what you'd have to give up to get him, right? If you could get him on the cheap, I would take a flyer on Carter Hart. Absolutely. He has the pedigree. He seems to be a decent goalie that could maybe help the Canadiens better than, you know, Jake Allen and Samuel Montembeau. But if you have to give up the farm to get him, then you might as well just go elsewhere. But it's been proven this NHL. Like, it's a weird – the NHL is at a weird stage where, like, sometimes goaltending really matters and sometimes it doesn't. And you could see it destroy teams like the Leafs, and you could see it destroy teams like Edmonton where, you know, it doesn't work out. But then Jordan Binnington and Matt Murray win cups with the Penguins and the Blues and kind of like, ah, you don't need goaltending after all. So the trick is to not – overcommit, really, I think, and you get a goaltender who is decent and who can run the gamut and who'll get hot at certain times, and that's it. And I think that's the key in today's NHL. And Carter Hart could be that for the Canadians, but I wouldn't sell the farm for him. But I would take a flyer on him, no pun intended. But if he became available, depending on the price.
Yes, you go after him. You go after him because, historically speaking, every time the Flyers have given up on a goalie, that goalie has gone on to do some pretty good things. So basically, as soon as you hear rumors that the Flyers want to get rid of their goalie, you should be one of those teams that goes and says, hey, you know what, maybe we give it a chance.
You're one of those guys that bet on black all the time, right? It's going to be black. If it's black three times in a row, it'll be black the fourth time. Let's go, right?
I'm one of those guys that's betting on a 24-year-old kid that was put in a very crappy situation who can't turn it around. He wasn't a first-round pick goalie. He was in the early second round, if I'm not mistaken. But he was a good goalie, and he showed that he could do things at the NHL level.
World
juniors. There's something that happens when you get under the magnified glass of the Philadelphia Flyers and their fan base. There's something that they do to goalies. And for years, they've struggled to get that number one. And as soon as they got somebody like Carter Hart, who was putting up a 917-914 save percentage in his first 2 years, all of a sudden, they said, we got our goalie. He's the next Carey Price. He's the next this. He's the next that. And in the end, it just either he buckled under the pressure, maybe, like Dave said, some injuries set him back a little bit. But no matter what, it's like now everybody has given up on a goalie who technically speaking, hasn't even reached his prime yet. Goalie's prime is typically at the age of 26 and over, between 26 and 32, somewhere around there. He's at 24. So I would take a chance to get him in Montreal, where he's going to have a lot less pressure in a sense. Montreal tends to put a lot of pressure on their goalies, but it's we're still in that rebuild, retooling stage. Now is the best time to kind of, take a flyer on a goalie, if you will.
Oh, my God. Intended.
But but that would be, it would be the right time to do it. I mean, look at Samuel Montembeau. He's playing without any pressure. Not really. And he's doing great things this year. Jake Allen is doing his thing. It's Jake Allen. So, yeah, at 24 years old, I take a flyer on Carter Hart.
Without even thinking. Okay.
But I wouldn't sell the flyer for it.
All right. But yeah, so you both said the exact same thing. You both want him, if he was there, to not sell the farm to get him. So then, realistically...
Well, I want him. Dave's like, we could probably... Dave's had to tell him, I'd take him.
Yeah.
But depends for what. I would say...
You want Montreal, him. Target him. Target him.
Target him as one of your top three, top four goalies. If Montreal's going out to acquire a goalie this offseason, and now you know he's available,
He is available, yeah.
Well, then you bring him in.
What's the cost? What are you prepared to give up for him then? Because they're not going to give him away, right?
Well, that's the thing. They're not. He's obviously arguably their biggest chip, training chip that they have, right? Like, so what gets you Carter Hart?
That's right.
Well, what do they lack? They lack defense, right?
It's a rebuild. It's a full rebuild. So you got to give them something that's going to be worthwhile in the future. It's prospects they're going to want.
Prospects. They're going to need picks, whatever. Montreal seems where Montreal's got a their prospect pool is very strong right now is on defense. They've got defensemen that they don't even know what they're going to do with them. Like, people are talking about Jaden Schrubel. What's going to happen with him? Is he going to sign or not? Because he looks at the depth chart of the Montreal Canadiens like, where do I fit in this? Norlander, where is he? Now, again, I'm not saying that's the piece that goes for Carter Hart, but now you start talking, okay, that, a pick. Now, I wouldn't give a first for Carter Hart. Don't even talk to me about a first. But maybe we'll start talking about a second, a third, plus something else. Make a package that is worth it. Because if they're going to go in a rebuild, like you said, they're going to need prospects and picks. And what they definitely need is centers. Montreal might not want to go to center route with them, but they need defense too. So
it's interesting because I just don't see Philly trading him. Like, because you said it yourself, he's 24 years old. Like, at what point do you stop giving up on your goaltender so young if you're the Flyers, right? Like, I think that he's part of the rebuild. Like, to me, it doesn't make sense. I think it's a nice thing to say, like, oh, look, there's a goalie available. The Canadians need a goaltender, and it's an easy fit. I think it's like an easy kind of, I don't want to say lazy, but like, it's an easy thing to say, like, oh, yeah, that'd be a perfect fit. But I don't see them moving him. I think it would be a mistake for them to move on from Carter Hart at this stage. I know he's a free agent. He has 1 year left on his deal. He has a very good contract, too. But I think that, I don't think you move on from him.
Well, I mean, we all know that GMs are silly. And I mean, we have no idea what's going on right now in Philadelphia. It is a complete whirlwind there. So who knows? I mean, apparently Elliot Friedman on his own podcast just today. There you go. For those watching, general managers are dumb. But Elliot Friedman mentioned that, they're taking calls for him. This is real. This is actually happening. It's past rumor now. It's legitimate. They're out there and they're saying we're not maybe necessarily going actively shopping him, but come. You know what we're all about. You know we're looking for a rebuild.
But they have to do that.
Well,
they're going to have
fine,
to.
But
they're rebuilding like they said they're going to rebuild. Then no kidding. They're going to look and say everybody's available. Because everybody is available. Everybody is available for them.
If you believe in your goalie, man, and he's only 24, and you're talking rebuild, if it's 3 years, it makes him 27, he becomes in his goalie prime. Like, if you believe in him, you're not shopping him. They obviously don't. They obviously don't, or not enough that they're not prepared to be like he's untouchable.
Philly's never believed in their goalies.
Well, fair, but I mean, listen. So follow up to this because I am curious from a Habs point of view because it's going to lead into my next question here. Yes, we know about Carter Hart. Yes, we know he's on the market. Yes, should the Habs be targeting if they are looking to upgrade in the goaltending position? Should they be looking for a guy who's already out there, or should they be trying to knock the doors of the Buffalo Sabres or the Calgary Flames at guys like Wolf or Levy? Like, is that who they're more slated to be better suited to going getting? Like, these higher end prospects that haven't quite played NHL that are like oh, these guys probably are going to be really good? Or do they go and do, at this point, a reclamation project a la Kirby Doc and get a Carter Hart and maybe change the scenery, different team, different stress? Although I can't see how it's less stressful in Montreal, but that being said, is that how they should play it? What would you prefer that they do?
I mean, the prospect road is great, but like these teams are not going to give up. Like, why would Calgary, again, there's so much talk of this, and like, why would they give them up? Right.
And Markstrom.
Yeah. Okay. But Markstrom is a hit and miss goaltender also. You need to think to the future. You know what I mean? Like, you can't really, Markstrom has been terrible this season, you know, like you can't keep bank on him to me. And you always need somebody like a successor heir to the throne. You see it time and time again. It'd be stupid for them to trade it. Now you're talking about Levi in Buffalo. He's a West Island kid, right? Like I had the pleasure of speaking to him multiple times. Again, he's an unproven commodity, right? And he was a Florida guy, traded to Buffalo. And yeah, fine. They have goaltending depth there, so you could see that move being made. But it's not a slam dunk either. It's tough. So to me, it's a hard decision to make, because I would probably favor a Carter Hart type of move more than going out and getting, you know, trading the farm. Defensive prospect still a couple years away. You know, goalies take they're it's like a roll of dice with the goalies, right? They're weird characters, they're odd, and sometimes they take years to develop, and sometimes, you know, as highly touted as they come in, take a look at Jack Campbell. You want to talk about Bobrov, you talk about Hannu Toivonen or whatever in Boston, where, you know, he was touted as the next coming, and it didn't work out there either. So goalies are hit and miss. And so to me, you almost go get, you know, there was talk of Samsonov yet last year with Washington. Yep. They had a little bit of interest in there. I think that's the route they're going to go. And I think that's a better route for them to go than to go get, you know, a prospect, which I think is going to be very difficult to snag. And then once you got him, it's not a slam dunk.
Fair. Very fair.
I guess it's going to depend where Montreal sees themselves. If they see themselves after this coming draft that they're like, okay, our cupboard is full enough now, it's time to start competing, and we want somebody that's a little more proven, then they're going to go to Carter Hart, maybe Thatcher Demko, because we know his name is out there too. They might go for somebody that's a little more seasoned, a little bit more advanced in their development versus somebody like Levi. It doesn't mean that they don't address their cupboard at the goaltender position, because they should. But to Dave's point, getting somebody like Levi or Wolf or Wallstad or any of those names that have gone in the rumor mill, some of which I don't even think are even on the block, it's just people trying to connect dots, it would take them a few more years. And you have players like Suzuki now, you have players like Caulfield, you have Doc, where they're further along in their development and further along into where the Canadians are going to be in the next couple of years. They may not want to start all over at the goaltender position, not sure what they're getting. It looks like they're going to want to compete in the next 2 years, or at least compete for a playoff spot, right? So, and those guys, while they could come in and be like a Kochetkov in Carolina and do pull some magic like that, it's very, very possible they could do something like that. The likelihood of them coming to the NHL and being an everyday number one is unlikely. So I think Montreal, if they're going to address the goaltender position, are going to pay a little bit more than to go get somebody that's proven, give an asset that's proven as well, most likely to get that, then rather than them selling the farm or paying probably a king's ransom for something like Devon Levi, because that's what everybody's saying. To get that from Buffalo, it's going to cost quite a bit. And okay, I don't think Montreal is going to want to pay that price just yet.
So that's fair. I mean, and we're talking, you mentioned Caulfield, which also kind of segues nicely into my next and I probably last question of this particular episode. What, in your opinion, now that the season is winding down, and I mean, a lot of people are jacked about the draft, and they just dropped as of the recording of this episode, I think they're in fifth to last place, so they're top five pick right now, you know, odds aside and everything. What are the absolute or the absolute must do for Hughes and Gorton in the offseason? Like paramount, number one, if they don't do this whatever thing, it's a failure of an offseason. Is it address the goaltending? Is it sign Caulfield to an extension? Is it get a top six forward, you know, or a top defenseman? Or whatever. You tell me. In your opinion, boys, what has to happen not, there could be several things, but what is the key number one thing in your opinion that must happen in the offseason?
You want me to go first?
I would like anybody to go first, but go ahead. Go ahead.
I'll go. I mean, look, I think the Caulfield thing, I'm not too worried about. That deal's going to work out, work itself out. I think, like, okay, it's obviously very important, but I mean, it'd be a stupid thing to say Caulfield, because obviously I think that deal just gets done, right? Goaltending to me, very important. I think that the sooner you address it, the better. I think that the longer you go with like Sam Montembeau and Jake Allen, it's kind of like you're running out of time to develop these guys and get them in. Like I said, these goalies, they need to fit into their surroundings. You need time for that. And very rarely a goalie comes in and he kills it the first year. He has to kind of to work his way there. So I would work on the goaltending probably first, and then also obviously a defenseman. Like, I think they need a top defenseman. I know they're rich on defensive prospect, but you need a veteran back there, and I think that's very important. It's a thing they didn't really address this past off season, and I think that you see the results from that. I think you absolutely need one there, and you need to tighten the competition amongst those prospects in that bottom four of the defense. So to me, it would be that defenseman, but also the goaltending absolutely needs to be figured out at one point. And the longer you go, the more you're in trouble of like, okay, we have a nice team, but no goaltender. And time and again with these playoff games. Right.
So very back end heavy for Dave. He wants a top defenseman brought in, veteran defenseman, or a goalie.
To me, you could get forwards. Like, you know what I mean? Like, they have a nice base. You know, they have Doc and Suzuki. They have Caulfield. They could get veteran forwards. And I think there are going to be guys who are going to want to come and play with these guys. So I think that you're going to be okay on that end going forward. So it's not pressing for me. But to me, that defense, I think it's going to be hard to get some, defensemen aren't easy to get, come by, you know? So I would go for that.
Fair enough. Vito.
It's going to be three things. These are the must. They're must. Okay. Nail this draft. Nail it. Home run. Kill it as best as you possibly can. Get everybody as excited as they were about the last draft. And I know it's a crapshoot. We don't really know what happened. That's number one. Number two, address the 2C or address the 1C, depending how you want to look at it. You know, some people don't believe Suzuki should be a number 1C. I do. So in that case, address the 2C, because you brought in Monahan. You saw what he could have done. You saw how he calmed things down, and it worked out. Monahan got hurt. Can't go into next season with Christian Dvorak as your 2C. That won't work. Or Kirby Dock potentially could be the 2C, but then there's still a hole there in the lineup. That you still need a veteran presence to kind of work it all out. And the third thing for me is get out from Hoffman's contract and any of those other dead weight contracts that are on the roster. Try your best to move those. Free up that cap to go and address some of these needs with that cap and have that flexibility and get out of that LTIR pool as fast as possible.
Interesting.
Those are the three things for me. Yes, defense is important. It really, really is. I mean, it was really rough going into the season, seeing Edmondson or Savard being plugged in as our top pairing guys. When they should really be on the third pairing on a good team and, you know, on a second pairing just to fit in whatever if you need to fill a hole. But other than that, it was tough to see that. But I think that those are more pressing, in my opinion, than the defense. Because Montreal's got defensemen to be excited about.
That's okay. Very interesting. I mean, aside from the draft, because I think that's a given. Everybody's like, you have to nail the draft. So that's not going to necessarily be a paramount on my list. I think that's just a pure given.
Also, that's like, you only know the result of that like 5 years down the line. So.
No, you're right.
We got to figure that out at the end of the...
Yeah.
This is one of Montreal's drafts where they have, like last year, have a lot of picks, right? And from rumors are that, you know, Kent Hughes wants to try to still get another first-round pick. So it's like they're putting a focus on this draft specifically. Plus, you know what everybody's saying, that it's a deeper draft than usual. You want to nail this draft.
Okay. No, listen, I mean, I don't think anything you said is wrong there. I think they absolutely have to do all those things. I think, in fact, they have to do everything that Dave said, too. I think it's a very, very long list of must-dos for this offseason. you know, Paramount, if you were to ask me, the very top, I mean, it's tough, man. I mean, the goaltending, I think because of what Monty and Allen showed this year, I think they might use them one more year. I don't know if they're going to address the goaltending, even though they ought to, unless there's something falls in their lap, like the Carter Hart thing, maybe. But I don't think they're going to go out and do something. The veteran sort of defensive presence there, again, to your point, Dave, I don't see many that are available and you know, the ones that you're going to want there, these like higher end one or two D guys, I think we're going to have to develop our own between the Ghoulies of the world and Harris and all the other prospects that we have. Like if someone could ascend and really get up there, I think that's probably the way that this team is going to get a top two defenseman up front. Again, to Dave's point, following up on that one. Yeah. I don't know if I'm so inclined about the top six forward to bring somebody in. Let me just quickly fix my camera here. It's driving me crazy. But yeah, we have a lot of prospects. We got a lot of guys that stepped up this year. I think a lot of those guys are going to slot in to some of the vacancies that are out there. We have no idea what they're going to do with why am I blanking on his name? The kid they just got from Dallas.
Gurianov.
You know, it's a very small sample size. There's still about another, dozen or so more games left. So they'll get to see a bit more of him. But are they going to offer him a contract? I have no idea. But you got things like Harvey Pinard, who has absolutely made a case for himself to at least really be looked at. The Yolonins, Anthony Richard, less so, but still incredibly good season in the AHL. Is he going to be bottom six? Who knows? So they got a lot of guys that they're going to probably move up.
Okay, so on defense, I know you're saying it's going to be hard to, like, who's available. A good defenseman to add to the Montreal Canadiens in this mold. It's not going to be this guy, but somebody like Ekholm. Somebody like Ekholm would be a good acquisition for the Montreal
Canadiens. But there's not a lot of Ekholms out there. Where are you getting them?
I understand that, but they could go and look at other teams who may have an Ekholm-type player that would fit on the Montreal Canadiens and try to acquire something like that.
The Ekholm-type players that are out there.
Every year, they just pop up randomly, right? Chick Renan came out of nowhere, kind of. Arizona, maybe people had saw it coming because he was Arizona, but he kind of, his availability last year came out of nowhere. You guys got Hampus Lindholm, you know what I mean? When he went to Boston, it was kind of like no one 2 years before that was saying, oh, yeah, there's going to be a Hampus Lindholm available, right? Like, you got to kind of see what's happening. When Dougie Hamilton got these guys, they just happen. Like, the general managers have their fingers on the pulse, and they're there, and they're making calls about guys that we're dreaming of or not even thinking, not even on the radar yet. So these guys, every year, there's guys that move, right? And you have to be there and alert and get them. You know, that was Bergevin's biggest flaw is you know, he stood there at the obvious avenues waiting for seemingly for these centers, and the centers don't come off trees and nobody gets dealt. And then they were all getting traded, you know, on the back roads. And that's what you kind of got to keep your eye on the pulse for when it comes to, these guys. Because every single year you could go back, good players are dealt. You just have to be the one to get them.
Yeah. I mean, and I guess to your point, right? When we look back historically at the team in the last 15 years, it was a lot of the Mark Bergevin tenure. And you're right. That was not one of his strengths. He was real good at finding deals for other guys that fit on a third line and stuff like that. And a bottom six pairing, he was phenomenal at that. But swinging for the fences was not his forte. A name that popped in my head, I mean, I don't know if he would be the guy, really. But there was a lot of talk before about it with John Klingberg, right? Would he be the guy? I don't know. He's the only one that I can think of that, like, theoretically would be a 1-2, although he wasn't playing very well in Anaheim this year, so I don't know if that was a one-off.
Yeah, you know, who was?
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. But, I mean, that'd be the only name. But to come full circle on it, yeah, I mean, they have a lot of needs. I'm curious to know what's going to happen. I think that's the fun part about this team and where they're at today. It's even though the season is winding down and they're like in the basement as far as they can possibly go practically, there's a lot of optimism, a lot of good things to look for and to kind of see the master plan unfold, right? I think that's the fun part about this as like a really engaged fan with this team that, you know, Hughes and Gorton are there and they're working on this plan, right? They must have some notion of a semblance of a roadmap that they're following. And they got things that they're addressing and they're taking it step by step and us getting to sit there and watch this thing unfold. And I think most of us have a lot of faith in this management. They haven't really done anything so far to really, you know, betray the trust of the fans. So where they stand today, it's a really exciting time to be a fan of this team and for the future of the club. So I'm just excited for the offseason. Like, just bring me the offseason already. I think the playoffs are going to be great. Little side note, I think we're going to have a phenomenal playoffs, not for the Canadians, clearly, but just in general for hockey, if you're a fan of hockey. I think there's going to be some really good matchups, so that'll be fun. But then give me that offseason, baby. I'm ready. Just plug it right into my
baby. You're asking me for who's a player? I just thought of it.
Okay, who's the Echo guy? Go ahead.
I would like the Montreal Canadiens to acquire Colton Parayko.
Colton Parayko.
Speedo's name, put on the board.
Put on the board. All right.
29, right-hand shot. Could put up some points. He's been around the NHL a little bit. He's a big guy, 6'6". Why not?
Okay. We'll circle back to this one. We'll come back.
Colton Parayko on episode 48.
I will take the odds that he does not wind up a Montreal Canadian, but listen. We'll see. Anyways, that is it for us today, everybody. Thanks very much for tuning in and listening. If you made it this far, we appreciate you tremendously. As always, take a look, follow us predominantly on Twitter. We do our updates there, let you know when new episodes drop. We engage with fans that respond back to some of our tweets and comments that we do throughout the games. We try to comment and tweet as often as we can. So definitely enjoy that as well. And for Dave and Vito, I'm Matt. And of course, this was
Get Pucked.